What is the hot seat? Is Hugh Freeze on the hot seat? And if he is, how does he get off of it?
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the boog, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir. We're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast live edition. I'm your host, Kyle Rush, a.k.a. Charlie Five. And I got my two guys, Daryl Dapperich, Zach Blackerby, and we're ready to have some fun. I'm going to talk have a little bit of hot seat discussion. I've seen a lot of tweets, seen a lot of, people opining that Hugh Freeze is probably one of the top coaches on the actual hot seat this coming up year. What does that mean? We'll dive into all the details in just a second. But before we get started, we got to give a shout out to mybookie.ag. You got two coupon codes. You got TNR Casino to get a 300% deposit bonus. That's three times. So give them $100. They're going to give you $300 back in free play to play with in the casino. And then you also have Next Round for a 50% deposit bonus anywhere. So take all that free play, win big, then go have some fun in the sports book. Check them out. Easy deposits, easy withdrawals. It's mybookie.ag. I don't know which exact tweet that got me stirring on this particular topic, guys, but basically it started in the middle of the year and it kind of heated up towards the end of the year. Paul Feinbaum's been very outspoken. I know that a lot of people are going to roll their eyes when I mention that name, but I think it's a fair discussion that going into year three, Hugh Freeze is what? 11-13, something like that. 11-14. Is Hugh on the hot seat? And I think to answer that question, the first thing you have to do is define what is the hot seat. You hear these terms, everybody's got special definitions. What is the hot seat, Daryl? In your opinion, what is the hot seat?
The hot seat is definitely not something that should be described as imminent or inevitable, like it's gonna happen for sure and it's about to happen, like it's just a matter of if, not when. The hot seat to me means if you don't do X and Y, then you're gonna get Z, and Z in this scenario means fired. So the hot seat also is described by me as an opportunity to do some things, to correct some things, to prove some things, to get off of the hot seat. To me, that's the true definition of it.
Zach, what about you? Is it much different? Is your definition much different?
I think of the hot seat as if you fall short of expectations, there's a chance that you will be let go.
So it's not like it's a concrete thing. It's just it could happen, or is it? I'm trying to pinpoint exactly what you're.
Yeah, I mean, I think if a coach is on the hot seat going into a season, it's if they don't achieve expectations, there's a chance that they get let go. Yeah, I don't think it's a concrete thing, but I don't think that's what the hot seat is. Or it'd be like this official like statement from a university saying if so and so doesn't win seven games, they're going to get let go. That's not what this is.
Gotcha. I'll go ahead.
I was going to say, I would rather really take this off to a different tangent, but I think you made a point about it not being inevitable or something that's concrete. It reminds me of the movie A Christmas Carol, if you guys ever saw that, where he gets an opportunity to redeem himself and there's a series of events and he can change his course. He can change his destiny. The hot seat to me is just like that. You have an opportunity to change course.
Gotcha. So in other words, You're sort of beyond the grace period, I guess. You're sort of beyond that, and it's to the point now where results have to show themselves, or there could be some tough decisions that have to be made. You think that's pretty fair statement there?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So with that being
games, keep the job. Sure.
Yeah. So with that being said, is Hugh Freeze on the hot seat? Is Hugh Freeze on the hot seat? And maybe how hot is the seat?
I don't think he's on the hot seat. No.
So you don't know when you say he's not on the hot, there's no jeopardy whatsoever that
if he goes 4-8, he's gone. I just don't think that's like a realistic world. So no, I wouldn't say that he's on the hot seat. No.
Daryl?
I think there's three components of him keeping his job, and he's done two of the three very, very well, recruiting and portal this year. Proof of concept is the third and the most important. So I would disagree with my boy Zach, and I would say, yes, he is on the hot seat for 2025, and there's a barometer there. There's a demarcation line that says if he doesn't do this, he will be gone, and I think it's not as extreme as 4-8. I think if he doesn't win eight games, just an opinion, I think if he goes 7-5, 6-6, he may be gone.
Really? Wow.
I think it's because this, first of all, he regressed from year one to year two. That matters. There's no marked improvement. And then I think there's a roster improvement that has been, to his credit, achieved that makes the expectations higher.
So you think if he goes 7-5, there's a chance that he's let go?
Chance, yes. I think if he goes 6-6, 5-7, 6-6, I think it becomes, yes, he does, not a chance. I think it happens.
Wow.
Interesting. So in your opinion, the seat's a lot hotter than maybe like Zach feels. That,
correct.
You know, where are you on this, Kyle?
So I think there would have to be a big disaster. I think there would have to be a big disaster for something to happen this year, mainly because of financial reasons. Financial reasons, and then it would have to be a disaster of a season, and then you would have to start seeing, you know, we talk about doing the right things off the field and those things starting to kind of build and stack up. If some of that starts to fall apart, so then you start, hey, this season, this offseason, you dodged a lot of bullets in the portal. You dodged a lot of – you basically almost batted 1,000 as far as keeping your most important – I guess you did bat 1,000 as far as keeping all your most important assets. When that stuff starts to fall on the wayside
–
In the portal or recruiting in general, you don't have a lot necessarily to point to.
What do you point to? Nate Marshall in recruiting and then TJ Lindsey in the portal. But like, I don't even know if that was like a performance thing. That may have just been other factors.
Exactly. And then with Nate Marshall, you still had four or five more great defensive linemen. So I think personally, totally. It's just me now. And I'm probably more lenient than I should be, but it feels like there needs to be much more than just a average 6-6 record for something to happen. If you're still sort of moving in the right direction from a roster standpoint, I just think it's going to become harder and harder and harder to do that. I think I saw somebody in the comments say, to me, it's more so, where'd it go? Let me find it. The warm seat. I saw, there he goes. I think he's on the warm seat. So that's kind
New
of
New Hampshire.
That's kind of how I feel.
Kyle, you nailed it though. You've cracked the code. We have said, all three of us at different times on Zach's show, that this was the last year he was going to get the benefit of the doubt and the goodwill of keeping high-ranked recruiting classes, getting people in here to play that are good portal additions, and keeping and maintaining players. That we are shocked he was able to do that with what happened on the field. I think we all agree with that. And we said, okay, that goodwill will run out unless we start seeing performance. Do you think 6-6 or 7-5 is enough to show recruits like Cam Coleman and Deuce Knight and portal guys that, okay, this is where you need to be, this is moving in the right direction? That's when I think it starts to unravel a little bit, unless you see some real contention. Because I just don't think 6-6 is enough to get anybody excited to stick around or come here in year three. Well, the honeymoon period is over. We're shocked that happened.
I don't think we're poking at the 6-6. I think we're poking at the 7-5 comment. I think that's kind of where the line is different for me. Emotionally, that feels different. And then if you lose a bowl game when you're 6-6, it just, I don't know, that feels a lot different than 7-5. I think you can sell a next step because like what your core is going to be then going into their true junior year. I think you can sell a step from 7-5 to 9-3/10-2 way easier than you can, you know, a step from 6-6 or, you know, wherever they are now to hopefully whatever we get to this upcoming season. I don't think 7-5 is, once again, we're talking about like worst case scenario, like what keeps them alive. We're not talking about expectations or anything like that. But if you go 7-5, I think with Auburn's resources when it comes to NIL and the relationships with staff and all of that, I don't think you might see some leave, but I don't think there would be this mass exodus like we're seeing in other programs in college football right now.
I think the 7-5 in War Eagle, Wyoming makes a great point. This is what I'm thinking. If you go 7-5, and I'm not trying to show any disrespect towards the Birmingham Bowl or any of these other bowls, as he says, you can drive yourself to, which is a great comment.
Sure.
If you do that and lose that game, I mean, Deuce Knight allegedly was at the Notre Dame playoff games. Cam Coleman wants to play for a championship. Do you really think that these guys are going to be excited about 7-5 and losing in the Music City Bowl or playing in the Birmingham Bowl? I don't know. I think it's going to take 8 wins and then a nice bowl game in Florida somewhere. You win that game, you build some momentum, and then you're showing progress. 7-5 and losing your bowl game that's a mid or suck bowl game, that's not, to me, showing proof of concept on the field or real progress.
So is proof of concept to you, Daryl, just wins and losses? So, and I got a
question. No, it's not. I think it's those three components, and he's checked off he's checked off two of them, but you've got to get to the third one. And if you can't get to the third one, which I think is the most important, then it does become that.
So let me ask you this. You just mentioned those guys leaving. What if Auburn went 8-4 this year, but Peyton Thorne threw for 1,700 yards, and it was ugly, and you're not really progressing on offense, or you're not getting a better product, and you've sold these wide receivers and this offensive dream to these people? Do you think just wins is what keeps people here, or do you? I guess, in other words, what I'm trying to say is, what if, let's say you're 7-5, but you're scoring 25, 26 points plus a game, and you're putting up good numbers, and maybe you're losing some close ball games on the road, or you're losing some, you know, overtime stuff like that. I guess that's where I'm trying to go. Like, can you get better without having just blanket say 8 wins? Like, can you show proof of concept without saying it's got to be 8 wins or we're going to lose all these guys?
I think how you get there matters. I think that they are connected to each other. I think for Auburn to get to 8 wins, you're going to have to see better offensive production. You can't regress and get to 8 wins. I get the whole 1,700 yard with Cam Coleman and those guys been happy. You know, if I get it. But I think that you have to show – look, if you win 7 games, you're 2 better than you were already. So that there is improvement there. But – you would have to really have an exciting, lighted up offense that everyone wanted to play in to go 7-5, I think, and still. And I'm not saying Deuce Knight and Cam Coleman would leave. I'm not predicting that. I'm not trying to speak that into existence. I'm just saying, how long will those guys stay happy with mid records at mid bowl games? I'm just throwing out a rhetorical question on that.
Well, and I just want to chime in on something. Kyle, what you just described is Auburn's season last year, if there's no pick six against Oklahoma and, you know, they don't put themselves in a major hole against Arkansas, or you don't, you know, turn the ball over 10 times against Cal. Like, Auburn did score that many points a year ago, and they did have an exciting offense between the 20s. They just couldn't score points. It's like they're close. And like, you talk to some of these offensive players that are coming in, and they believe in the offense. They're just like, they couldn't execute when it mattered most. And, you know, these new guys are coming in thinking, well, I could be the reason we take this next step on these, you know, the money downs on third down or snaps within the 20. So it's just kind of funny. Like, we're 2 plays away from actually being that hypothetical offense that scores 26 plus points a game and won 7 games. It's just, that's not how it felt.
I agree. I feel like it's closer. I feel like we're closer to 7-5 than 5-7, which is, I know that's probably Call me whatever. Call me an apologist.
You know what that is?
What's that?
The book.
That's the book.
No, that's so that's the point I want to make is throwing out hypotheticals on what could make you on the hot seat or not on the hot seat is not my prediction. Yeah, I'm with you. In fact, I think Auburn, I think the floor for Auburn next year is 7 wins. I think they could get 9 wins with this roster and it would not shock me at all.
You think the floor is 7 wins?
I do. I really do.
You kind of jumped me a little bit as far as questions go.
I'm sorry, Kyle. Going back to the semantics of the hot seat thing then. If you think the floor is 7-5, then you don't think he's on the hot seat. Like, if you don't think that's an actual reality for him to go 6-6, like, if you truly think the floor, mm-hmm. the floor is worst case scenario.
Right.
Then, like, he's really, then he's not on the hot seat.
I think the floor is not what you should achieve or strive for with this roster after you've shown regression from year one to year two. And I think being at the floor can get you fired. I want to see above the floor.
But the floor is higher than what you said would get him fired.
6-6, 5-7, 7-5 could, depending on how it looked. If he lost his bowl game.
Okay.
Regardless, there has to be something turned around a little bit this year. May not be as imminent as way some of the naysayers, some of the media may portray it. It may not be as imminent as that, but regardless, you're going to make yourself, you're going to make life that much harder with your trustees, with the donors, with everybody. It's the most alignment I've ever seen as an Auburn fan. Alignment ever. Sure. Another performance like this, even if you don't lose your job, will, in my opinion, severely handicap you in that whole scenario, which in turn could lead to possibly, you know, other things. But regardless, there has to be some improvement. I don't think we disagree. Auburn's got to get better. Auburn's got to get better kind of across the board. So if Hugh is on this hypothetical hot seat to where, you know, if you don't show some improvement, you're going to severely handicap yourself. What are some things, Daryl, that you see? What are some things you need to see different? What are some things that he's got to do to be able to get himself off that hot seat, be able to win back a lot of this fan base? I'm just looking in the comments. It's, you know, 50-50, it feels like, you know, some that are saying, yeah, he's got to go. And there's some that saying, no, he doesn't have to go. Like, what does he have to do? What does Auburn have to do this year to sort of win back a lot of those good graces from all the recruiting classes and the portal halls and all that stuff? Like, how does Hugh and Auburn win that back?
First of all, the talent evaluation has to be there. He has to show that he chose the right quarterback and that the Will Redmond coup that I feel very, very high on and comfortable with, that it paid off. We need to see that the portal additions make an impact and that he chose wisely at the quarterback position. So talent evaluation. Number two, the play calling needs to get better in the red zone. We need to see improvement in the red zone. We need to see it's really, really simple. We can talk about how great and proficient and productive the offense is in between the 20s. I don't care. People want to score points. Until they start using yards gained as a barometer of how you win games, I don't care. Get better in the red zone. If he gets better in the red zone, chooses the right quarterback, the portal additions make an impact, and he gets a few more wins, he absolutely, absolutely gets off the hot seat. And then you start talking about contention in 2026, Auburn contending.
Zach, what do you think? How does he get himself back into better graces, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think Daryl nailed it. I think Daryl nailed it on all the big ones. I mean, I guess to stretch one out a little bit, like Jackson Arnold, I think, is an important aspect in all of this. I think Jackson Arnold needs to live up to the hype that he had, I guess, going into the season against Oklahoma, or who he was as a recruit when he chose to go to Oklahoma. The whole quarterback whisper thing. I mean, that's kind of the biggest knock against Hugh Freeze's time at Auburn, outside of wins and losses, of course, is how he's handled the quarterback position. The Hugh Freeze naysayers are really eager to point out that all the scholarship quarterbacks are gone, which I think is a little is a little selective. And when you look at the context of it, I don't think it's that crazy, but that's a big talking point against them. So how do you fix that? Well, you roll out Jackson Arnold and you kind of show glimpses of Deuce Knight and garbage time when you can and say, hey, this is our future. Jackson Arnold is our present. And then obviously, you know, you don't want to fall off in recruiting. Daryl hinted at that, you know, earlier on the hot seat conversation of you can't let up there. The 2026 class is already off to a hot start. Let's stack all these classes. Let's see if we can get another top five class.
With all that being said, and I don't disagree with any of it. I don't disagree with it. I think I'm with you. I think.
Did we leave anything out, Kyle?
No. Well, the only thing that I would like to see, I would like to see a little bit more of and hear a little bit less of, is communication issues. That's I would like one. To hear a lot less about communication issues, a lot less about running the wrong routes, a lot less about making the incorrect, this was open, but we made the incorrect this, we did this wrong, we missed assignments. I would really like to see, I would really like to just not hear that anymore. I don't think that that's something that like anybody's is probably telling the truth. But the problem is, yes, so-and-so may have missed an assignment, but like, why are they missing assignments? That's the part that I think's got to get fixed. And I don't know that I know the exact answer to why that's happening. I mean, again, I'm not there, so I don't know exactly why that's happening. But to me, the communication piece is something that we constantly heard. And I think if that can get cleared up, that might answer a lot of the questions that are and concerns that we've all voiced tonight. So with all that being said, we define what the hot seat is. Does he deserve to be on the hot seat? And, you know, what can he do to get off of it? Does he have the roster to be able to achieve all those things? You just mentioned Jackson Arnold. I like his upside. I like his potential. It's a gamble. It is a gamble. You've brought in a really good left tackle, a really good right tackle. You get a Xavier Miller possibly coming back for another year. Is the roster at the point in year three that you can do all those things, Daryl, that you can, you know, that you can execute and sort of win the graces back and games at the same time? Do you feel like we're in a spot from a roster standpoint to be able to do those things?
I do. Now, I get it. The proof is in the pudding. We can talk about this all we want in January of 2025. We'll know the answer to that question at the end of next year. I do believe, I mean, that's why I said the talent evaluation piece is so big. The eval, I believe, and I'm not a scout or somebody that's on a coaching staff, I just trust Will Redmond so much on talent evaluations that I think they've got it right. And I'll say this too. It's not just the Auburn people that feel really good about what Auburn did in the portal. There are experts. There are people that do this for a living that say they're third, they're fourth. They got the best tackle in the portal. They got the best receiver in the portal. Those things matter. So, yes, if we believe and trust Will Redmond, if we believe and trust the eyeball test, and if we believe and trust what these experts and scouting services said, Auburn absolutely has the talent to get him off the hot seat, to show improvement, and that's why I believe it will. That's why I'm saying they could win 9 games, or they should, that 7 should be the floor, and that 8. I believe that this roster is reconstructed to the point where they have got it right, and now it's time to show it on the field.
Zach, thoughts?
Yeah, but I also want to add, I agree with everything Daryl said, but I also think the roster was good enough last year to get us in a better situation. Auburn's roster was better than Cal's. Auburn's roster was better than Arkansas's. Auburn's roster was better than the roster that Oklahoma had on that specific game just because they were so injured at so many different positions. So, yeah, the easy answer to that is yes, absolutely. But that didn't mean everything last year, and so you've got to fix it, and you fix it with execution and coaching and scheme. Like you can't blame anything else at this point.
No, I totally agree. I think I've even said that you're at the point now from a roster standpoint that if you can't make it happen on offense, you might not be able to. for whatever reason. I don't know what that reason would be. I do think we had a really good roster last year, but I think the two most important positions on the team, I think Auburn was handicapped a little bit. I think with the offensive line in certain scenarios really put us in a bad position. And I think obviously Peyton played great, but there were just some crunch time aspects of his game that just couldn't sort of make it happen for whatever reason. Could be him, could be the system, could be the relationship with the coaching staff. I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, if you look at the stats in the third and fourth quarter, they weren't there. You look at the stats on third down, they were tough. And I think I wonder sometimes if that what goes into play calling. I've seen a lot of play calling in the comments. Play calling, you can boil it all down last year to play calling. And I guess my question to that is, I'm trying to think of the best way to phrase this, but do you think that those deficiencies I just mentioned hindered play calling at all? Do you think or it changes your mindset as a play caller that if you can get those things fixed, it could be just a world of difference? We're talking about play calling in general, or is it just a philosophy thing that you think needs to change?
No, that's a good point. I will say this. I think that we can talk all we want about play calling, but I think self-inflicted things that are – and I know I'm going to sound like a big homer. I can't imagine some of the fluky, self-inflicted things that happened to Auburn that they did to themselves will repeat themselves in 2025. So how does that affect play calling? I'll give you an example. You're 4th-and-4 from the 35-yard line, and you don't have a kicker that you feel comfortable making a 45-yard field goal. So instead of kicking the field goal and taking the points, you run a play on 4th-and-4 and get stopped. That's how it affects play calling. You don't have confidence that you're going to get the points, so by God, I better go for it here and call a play that doesn't work, and now you've taken points off the board because you have no confidence in your kicker at all. That stuff matters. Or, I'm in the red zone, and I don't know if there's going to be a bad read by my quarterback that's going to lead to an interception, so I'm going to put a dude in there that runs wildcat and runs it from the 5. I don't know. Oh, I just think – you know what I'm saying? there has to be something there that he saw that concerned him. The kicking thing's a no-brainer. That's why you go for it on fourth down, because you don't have confidence. Mm-hmm. But why did you get cute in certain situations inside the goal line? I think because there was maybe a fear factor there.
Yeah, or you pick up a few yards on first down, second down's an incompletion, or there's a penalty, and then like all of a sudden you're behind the sticks every single time, or you get called for holding on a punt return or a kick return, so your drive starts at the 5 or 10 yard line. It's like so many times we just shot ourselves in the foot over and over and over again.
Yeah, self-inflicted. Yep.
Self-inflicted wounds. And I think that maybe goes back to the looking cleaner, communicating, just looking more like we have we're all on the same page. I guess that's kind of where I'm going with that. And I do think I do sometimes wonder how hard it is. I was thinking about the Vanderbilt game. Auburn starts off the game with a power run off tackle for 15 yards. Okay. And then I don't know if it was the very next play or if it was the play after. They dial up this play where you have Luke Deal running up the seam just by himself for a big game, and it sailed 10, 15 yards over his head. And I'm just thinking, how hard is that as a play caller? How hard is that? How demoralizing is that as a play caller? So not only now am I in the situation to where I've got to obviously call a play that works, but I've got to call a play that I know that I'm thinking this offensive line can they block this long enough? Is Peyton going to see it? Is Peyton going to make the right read? And then obviously will they catch it when it's thrown? So all that. I know all that has to weigh on you. And I think at some point in time, it can maybe kill your confidence again, but you can't rely on that anymore. You can't fall back on that anymore. Those questions that I just mentioned, those things have to be answered. And I think based off of what we've seen in the portal, just had another big portal addition today on defense. I think what you've brought in on the offensive side, hopefully, in theory, should be able to solve a lot of those issues. Thoughts there?
Well, I think part of the frustrating thing that you just described, I mean, that scenario you just laid out is exactly the microcosm of the Auburn season, right? Plays are there and they get missed. I think what makes it more frustrating is there were a few games where you could see it. You could see Hugh Freeze in his bag. The Kentucky game in the second half was the Texas A&M game the first half. I mean, that is such
Oklahoma
the first half. That is elite play calling with execution. Then what happens is, to me, when the first sign of adversity or the first sign of self-inflicted wounds or missing these plays, something happens where they go into a turtle shell and it changes everything. So to me, what Hugh Freeze has to do next year is say, if it's successful and even we go away and something happens, still go back to it. It's there. Don't get scared. That's what I was talking about, calling plays in fear. Get away from that.
Zach, do you agree?
Yeah, this is like the portal question, like the additions. Yeah, I think you're improving at every position with the exception of tight end. And we'll see how they use Preston Howard and how he compares to what Rivaldo was able to do. Take a step back at running back too, but I think the way Hugh Freeze likes to use running backs, I don't know how much impact that's honestly going to have, whether Auburn fans like it or not. I just think that's kind of the world we're going to live in offense. But I think Eric Singleton's him. I don't think there's any question about it. I think Eric Singleton is, I know Auburn fans are excited about him, but I just think he's so much better than what most people are expecting of him. So I think the world of Eric Singleton, that's going to do so much for Malcolm and for Cam and hopefully Perry as well. And then, you know, we'll see how Horatio Fields fits into all of this. But I mean, one of you guys said it earlier. It's like, we're at the point when it comes to talent where if you can't do it with this group, like I don't know what we're doing at this point.
I agree. I'm hopeful that those pieces you just mentioned are going to help at least remedy a little bit of the, you know, I guess, confidence issues to call certain plays that you think could work. Because like you said, there's so many times where, I mean, I thought we were going to blow Oklahoma just completely out of the water. I thought it was going to be just a complete blowout. And then things change a little bit in the second half. The game gets close. Game's on the line. And it just goes haywire from there. So again, communication, stuff like that's got to get better. And I think we can remedy a lot of these conversations that are being had about Hugh's future at Auburn, because again, the alignment, I've never seen alignment like I've seen. I've never seen recruiting like I've seen. I love the addition of Will Redmond, and I feel like from spring portal last year to this year, the roster improvement has been incredible. So hoping that we can kind of keep that momentum going.
Can we talk about today's edition just for a second?
Yeah, man. Chris Kelly Murray. His whole name is Chris Kelly. He's got two first names in one.
I love that. That's fine.
I love it.
Chris Murray from Sam Houston State, which Sam Houston is not a state. We can ignore that.
True.
I love this kid. Love him. Love the addition of what he brings. Stop me if you've heard this before. We're going to get a guy with multiple years left of eligibility who feasted at a smaller level of competition to come be behind a guy who's already really good at rushing the passer. Have we heard that before?
Yeah, sounds like Keyron Crawford from spring.
And also J-Mac.
Jalen McLeod.
Yeah, I mean, this guy had 32 pressures at Sam Houston a year ago. If you would have put that amount of pressures on Auburn's team this year, it'd be second. I think Keldrick had 42. It would have put him ahead of Jalen McLeod. It would have put him ahead of Keyron. Now, obviously, his level of competition is vastly different. But this guy, dude, like, for what he's going to be, which I assume is Keyron's backup, oh, my goodness. Like, this is a big addition. I'm super, super excited about Chris Murray.
Yeah, he completes that room. He completes that edge room, I think. It's the perfect addition, like you said, multiple years. And a guy that has the production at the, you know, Division I level. I think he had, what, 8 sacks last year, according to a PFF? I think that's what it said.
Yeah, the Pete Nakos tweet when he reported that he was signing with Auburn gave him 5.5. But we've always said that when it comes to counting sacks, that PFF is what we should go by.
1,000%. I trust PFF with my life, unless I disagree with the
when it comes to counting the sacks from Chris Murray, 100%.
100%. Guys, thank you all for jumping in tonight. I really appreciate it. Great conversation. I think we've kind of put a bow on all that, and I agree with – I think we're all on the same page. So, good stuff. Guys, thanks again for joining us. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay button.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.